Who do you think of when you think of somebody who really gets into praying? People that get into it. Think of something. Maybe a friend, maybe it was years ago, an experience. I remember many years ago, I was in seminary and I had to do these practicum things. And one of the ones I did was with a Chinese church. And I don't speak any Chinese. I learned a couple of words back then when I was doing it, and I'm pretty sure that the way I pronounce them now, they're no longer Chinese words. But I went to a prayer meeting. It was a small group. There was maybe 10 or 15 of us. And it happened entirely in Chinese, so I had no idea what was going on, other than that people were praying. And we knelt in a circle in a small chapel in the Chinese Christian church in Milwaukee. And we had prayer time for, I don't remember how long, probably 45 minutes to an hour. And I remember kneeling there and listening to these prayers in another language and not understanding a word of what they were praying, and yet thinking, these people are into it. They're serious about what they're praying about. They were getting into their prayers. And I guess some of the requests at the beginning, someone had translated some for me, so I knew supposedly what we were praying for. But the prayer went on much longer than what I would have said we had requests for, if you will. As you think about people that get into their praying, though, some of you thought of somebody that you think is a little weird when they pray. Confess it. How many of you, when I said you thought of somebody that gets into their praying and you thought of somebody weird? Christy's honest, all right? Renee's honest, and half the rest of you are lying, okay? You thought of somebody that when they pray, you just thought it was a little weird. When I was 10 or 11, I had to go to the adult prayer meeting at our church because our church only had like 18 people at prayer meeting, if that. There was no youth group, and I was the pastor's son, so I had to be there. So I would go to prayer with the adult men. And I suppose if I had been a little bit more attentive young child, I might have learned something about life or prayer or whatever. Instead, I just counted how many times the weird guy said, Lord, in the middle of his prayers. Right? Felipe, just you admit that you've done that, haven't you? All right? Sometimes when people get into their prayers, and I don't know how sincere that guy's prayers were. They certainly were more impassioned than mine were at that age, and probably now too. But sometimes when we think about people that really get into their praying, it kind of makes us feel a little awkward, the way they get into it. Whether it's the language they use, whether it's the energy with which they do it, the emotions. Go from praising the Lord to crying or calling out loudly or softly or whatever. It sort of contradicts with our own prayer style, if you will, and it makes us feel a little weird. I have a sneaking suspicion that if we met some of the psalmists and spent time with them during their prayer time, we would feel that they were really getting into it, but we also probably would think that some of them were a little weird. In fact, let's look at Psalm 102 this morning. If you haven't been with us, we started last week in Psalm 102, and we're going to be there this week and the next 2 weeks, looking at parts. And last week we looked at what I called the backbone of the psalm. And that is this tension between the psalmist's days, which he describes as being fleeting and like smoke or like an evening shadow, and the eternality of God, God's years, God's permanence. We talked about that as both a positive and a negative tension. It's a negative tension because if God is so big and eternal, can He stoop to care about my fleeting days? But then it's a positive tension because we ended by saying, what other kind of God could we possibly want or need than one who is beyond our fleeting and shadowy days? So we saw that as the tension in the psalm, and I suggested last week that in a very real sense, all prayer happens at that intersection. happens at the intersection between my smoky days, insubstantial steam, vapor, as James calls us, and God's eternal power. Well, let's take that backbone and put a little flesh on it this week. I want us to just look at the psalmist's complaint section. And that's really just verses 1 through 11. I'm going to read it, and I want you to just pay attention to the language as I read. Don't necessarily try to make complete sense of it. Just pay attention to the language. Imagine somebody praying this in your little prayer group, and you tell me afterwards if you think that he was a little weird. Hear my prayer, O Lord. Let my cry come to you. It sounds like what Lucinda just read in Psalm 143. Do not hide your face from me in the day of my distress. Incline your ear to me. Answer me speedily in the day when I call. So far, he's not too weird, except he sounds like Shakespeare. For my days pass away like smoke, and my bones burn like a furnace. My heart is struck down like grass and is withered. I forget to eat my bread. Because of my loud groaning, my bones cling to my flesh. I am like a desert owl of the wilderness, like an owl of the waste places. I lie awake. I'm like a lonely sparrow on the housetop. All the day my enemies taunt me. Those who deride me use my name for a curse. For I eat ashes like bread and mingle tears with my drink because of your indignation and anger. For you have taken me up and thrown me down. My days are like an evening shadow. I wither away like grass. Now, if you were sitting in prayer group and somebody prayed like that, after about the third phrase, your head would have tipped up and one eye would open. And you would have looked at him. And then probably your friend across the way would do the same thing. And you both raise your eyebrows like, what? Bones burning like a furnace? What's he been reading? It's a little weird, isn't it? Well, I want to look at what the psalmist prays, but also more today, I want us to consider why he prays this way. Okay? Why does the psalmist pray this way? But let's just look at what he says. I want us to understand. It's kind of poetic, although it's even, I think, probably for the Hebrew, it's a little weird, to be honest. I think if he was in prayer group with his friends back in the day, they would have been a little bit like, owl of the wilderness. Okay, Ishmael, whatever you say. These are not common expressions. It's not like everybody prayed this way back in the time of the psalmist. He's using interesting language to say what? Well, let's look at verse 3. My days pass away like smoke. My bones burn like a furnace. My heart is struck down like grass and is withered. These three phrases are all very metaphorical. They're not literal. They're images. His days like smoke tell us they just pass away. They seem insubstantial. We talked about that last week. My bones burn like a furnace. Well, not literally, obviously, but it fits with the smoke imagery. What is he suggesting? Well, there's some sort of internal turmoil, right? Some people interpret this to suggest he has some physical difficulties. Maybe he's had chikungunya and his joints are painful. I don't know. But there's an internal problem. There's a turmoil within his soul that feels like his very innards are being burned in a furnace. His heart is shriveled up like grass in the dry sun. All very metaphorical. But then the next line is literal. I forget to eat lunch. We talked a little bit about that last week. Because of my loud groaning, verse 5, my bones cling to my flesh. He's kind of suggesting that maybe he's lost weight through this turmoil. Forgot to eat lunch a few times. A few other times didn't really taste what he was eating, as we see later on in the psalm. And he's weakened, whether by something physical or by this internal turmoil. And then he goes into these other images. I'm like a desert owl, an owl of the waste places. These words are so rare, we don't even know what kind of birds they reference. They seem to be some species of owl. He seems to be talking about a couple of things at the same time. One, he's isolated. He's solitary. He's awake at night, which he says very literally, I lie awake. The picture is of a lone owl hooting in the dark, isolated, up all night, in the dark. Very powerful imagery when you think about it, and very common with somebody whose heart is in turmoil, if they're in a time of emotional distress or in depression or whatever it is. But strange phrases. An owl of the wilderness, an owl in the waste places, a lonely sparrow on the housetop. I suspect you've never prayed that. What's he doing? He's grasping for images to communicate how he's feeling spiritually and maybe physically as well. Then he gets literal again. Look at verse 8. All day my enemies taunt me. Those who deride me use my name for a curse. I suggested last week this might be more using it like a joke. Hey, don't turn out like him. Or as a curse, which would be saying, well, you keep heading that way, you're going to end up like that person. Using their name as a punchline or a threat in people's lives. Because of his turmoil, his emptiness, his difficulty, he's become the poster boy, we put it in our modern terminology, for distress. And so people use his name as a curse. Then he speaks again metaphorically, I think. Verse 9, for I eat ashes like bread and mingle tears with my drink. Mingling the tears with his drink may be literal, that he cries into whatever he's drinking. He's probably not literally eating ashes. I suggested last week that this ties in with the idea of being in mourning. But also maybe his food tastes like ashes. Those of you that have been through times of severe emotional and spiritual difficulty, maybe you remembered to eat, but you don't remember what you ate, right? There's no taste. I ate because I had to, right? And that's his experience. Then in verse 10, he talks about God's role in this, and I'll talk about that in a little bit later. But then he ends the section by saying in verse 11, back to imagery, my days are like a shadow, an evening shadow. I wither like grass. What has he done? He's used a mixture of metaphor and literal phrases to communicate something very intensely. We get the picture that the whole person, both internally and externally, has been consumed. Image of fire and withering, of smoke and shadow. There's nothing left here. Just slight residue of some ash on your fingers. If you picked up the psalmist, his days, there's just nothing there. It's very powerful. It's vivid. It's intense. But it's also very honest. There's an intensity here and there's an honesty here that he has communicated in this prayer. I think at the end of prayer group, you would think two things. Okay, that was a little weird. He was into it. It was weird. But man, he communicated how he felt. He got his point across. I don't know if you have experienced a situation like the psalmist's. I would hope for you that you're not in the midst of one now. This sounds pretty nasty to me. You may be. Maybe you've gone through that before. Maybe you can identify with, maybe not the language, you never thought to yourself that you were an owl of the wilderness, but you can identify with the sentiment, that intensity, that honesty of just being consumed. I want to ask why the psalmist says it the way he says it. Why use this imagery? Why speak poetically? Why use the language of being shriveled up? And I want to ask that because I don't think you and I do that much in our prayer. And yet the Psalms are full of that sort of language. So the Bible's prayer book is full of people talking this way, and yet you and I hardly ever talk this way. And I want to probe that just a little bit this morning, hopefully in a way that will be helpful to us. So why does he say it the way he says it? at one level, I don't think we can know why the psalmists expressed themselves exactly the way they did, okay? That would involve like psychoanalyzing them in a way that I don't know that is helpful. But I think if we look at his expressiveness, the expressiveness of other psalmists, I think we can benefit from them as a model for our prayer in some ways. And I want to say this. I think the psalmist, if nothing else, models getting into it. Let's get my catchphrase for today is getting into it. Getting into prayer. And I think that his language is a major part of him getting into it. Getting into it in three ways. Of course it's three ways. It's always 3 points. First of all, I think his prayer and his language is an effort to get into it with himself. What do I mean? It's an effort to get into his own condition. As humans, we're very verbal people, right? Some of us more so than others, but this sets us apart from the animals. We're very verbal. But just because we're verbal doesn't mean we always have precise words to describe how we feel. There's kind of two classes of people. People, when you ask them how they feel, talk for 15 minutes to try to get to one small expression. And people that think for 15 minutes before they say the one small expression, right? And God, in his infinite wisdom, makes sure that these people marry each other. Right? You're laughing because it's true. And one of them can go on and express what he or she is thinking or feeling. And the other one, how do you feel about that? And the other one gets impatient, waiting for the answer, for them to articulate how they're feeling, what they're going through. I think that what we are observing in this psalmist is not some natural poetic impulse. It's not like this guy was naturally a poet. And so, I think I shall pray today. How shall I pray? I am like an owl of the wilderness, O Lord. I don't think that's what's going on. It sounds to us in our translations like kind of flowery prayer language, but what I think he's doing is he's trying desperately to give voice to a personal experience that he really doesn't have language for. He's trying to give voice to an extreme situation and a turmoil of soul that does not have simple words to express it in any language. Hebrew or English or Spanish or whatever. And I think this is why the language bounces back and forth from literal to metaphorical. You almost get the picture of someone grasping at words to capture how they're feeling. When he prayed this prayer, how long did he pause between each phrase? Lord, my heart's like, it's like the grass that shriveled out there on the front lawn, God. Long pause. I haven't eaten in 2 days, God. Long pause. He's grasping for words. And what he finds are these extreme metaphors that communicate something, but they come across as a little weird, quite frankly. But his soul is in such a condition that that's the best he can do to try to give voice to his situation. Now, we do this in conversations with one another, perhaps slightly less poetically. You've probably said something to someone, I feel like I got hit by a Mack truck, right? When you were sick or something was going on. One of my mother's favorite expressions to describe herself when she was sick when I was a kid was that she felt like death warmed over. Your mother ever use that expression? Death warmed over. It's a great image. So we're not unfamiliar with the idea of communicating in metaphors and expressions. We do this as humans all the time to give voice to things that are hard to express. But we don't often do it in prayer, I don't think. The psalmist, I think, is praying this way to get into his own condition, to get at the root of how he is feeling and entering into his own suffering. And part of the purpose of prayer and some of our other spiritual practices like meditation and silence and journaling is to do that, is to help us enter into our own difficulties, enter into our own spiritual condition deeply enough to really begin to understand and express what is going on in us. And I think the psalmist's phrases come out of such a time of self-reflection and examination. He's trying to express, he's trying to get into his own condition. I've probably commented before, I know I have, commented before that we live in a pretty unreflective age. Except for maybe a very few of you, most of us don't find it easy to express ourselves, express for ourselves or for others, how we feel or what we're going through. We use some stock phrases, but we can't really express what's going on in our souls. We lead lives, quite frankly, that crowd out reflection. Life in this age just doesn't lend itself to reflection. And I think, in part, because of that, we've almost lost the capacity for self-reflection. It's possible that that has contributed to the rise of the role of the counselor or the psychologist. People who are trained to ask questions, to do what? To draw us out of ourselves, or maybe to draw us into ourselves. You ever had a friend or a counselor do that for you? Ask questions or rephrase something to help you see and understand something you were going through in a way you didn't before? You said, "Well, I'm feeling like blah." And then they said, "Do you mean that what you're feeling is?" And you're like, "Yeah, that's it. That's what I was feeling. That's what's going on." I think that there's a need for these professionals, but I wonder sometimes if perhaps our way of life has made it so we are less self-aware and less capable of self-examination than maybe other ages. In the past, journaling and letter writing were more common, and life, of course, was not at the same sort of pace and had the distractions that our life does. And it seems to me that maybe other eras of Christians found it easier to enter into that, like the psalmist, and pray through who they were and what they were facing. The psalmist's style of prayer sets an example for us of taking the time and the effort to enter into our situation, whatever it is, as deeply as possible. And one of the benefits of this is because he's entered in through his metaphors, through struggling through his emotions and trying to express them, he will, after the fact, be able to be more articulate about God's faithfulness. If he was more specific about what he was really going through and feeling, then he can turn around and after God has answered, he can be more specific and articulate about how God has restored him. And you see that in a lot of the Psalms. Very deep language about the sorrow, very rich, beautiful language about God's rescue. Those things are linked. I think that in our contemporary situation, we're often vague about what we're really going through with ourselves, and then we're equally vague about how God intervened and how it turned out. So I think this language models for us getting into prayer for our own sake, getting into our own suffering and difficulties. Not just, I'm in a bad mood, but entering into our sufferings and our difficulties and our problems, giving voice to them, whether with literal expressions, I'm not sleeping well, I'm not eating right, or with metaphors, I feel like I've been run over this week. I don't think the psalmist engages in this reflection only for his own psychological and spiritual benefit. He doesn't just get into it for himself. He's getting into it with God as well. I want you to look at verse 10 as an example of this. In the middle of this prayer, he says, "Because of your indignation and anger, for you have taken me up and thrown me down." I don't know what all we can say about the psalmist's theology, but he's clearly not afraid to implicate God in some way in his current distress, right? Some of you, if somebody prayed that in prayer meeting, you'd be like, lightning, lightning, right? And yet if you're honest, you've had a few prayer times yourself where you've said things like, what are you doing, God? That's implicating God in what's going on, okay? Either saying that he's doing it or accusing him of not doing anything. It's the same thing. He's not afraid to do that. We can't hear the psalmist's tone here, okay? If it's like that, I don't think so. I read it less of as a harsh critique and more like him saying, God, I just feel like you picked me up and then just threw me down. Not really accusing, just expressing how he's feeling. His sentiment is balanced by the fact that he clearly thinks that God's also the solution to the problem. So he's not telling God to buzz off. But he's very honest. He's chosen honesty and openness with God about his situation. And that includes honesty with God about how he thinks God's involved. Do we talk this honestly with God? Not just the part about implicating God in what's going on. God, I don't think you're doing anything, or where are you? That's all allowed. The psalmists do it. But even the other stuff, the owl in the wilderness stuff. Do we open up to God really about how we're feeling? One of the most dangerous habits in marriage, I suppose any relationship, but particularly in marriages, is withholding oneself emotionally and in communication. What often happens is that one spouse withholds how they're feeling and thinking for any number of reasons. Okay? But the real problem comes is that then they interact with their spouse as if they had given their thoughts and their feelings and were rejected. They expect the spouse to know what they're thinking and feeling, even though they didn't express it. They withheld it. And what that usually leads to is resentment and bitterness. I think we do the same thing with God. We may pray, but kind of in a restricted, Christian-y sort of way. Don't really open up to Him about how we're feeling and how we think He's involved with it. And we may do that because maybe we haven't really gotten it into ourselves, so we don't know how we're feeling exactly, so we don't express it. It may be that we've bought into some preconceived idea about what prayer is supposed to look like, so we don't pray very open and emotionally. So we don't open up to God, and then we act embittered and resentful towards Him when He seems inattentive to our needs. Now, I know what you're going to say. Well, He's omniscient, so He knows. How many of you are going to say that? God already knows how I'm feeling, so I don't have to tell Him. Right? Frankly, that's only marginally different than when you say to your spouse that they ought to know how you're feeling and then hold them in contempt because they don't act accordingly. All you're doing is holding your spouse's supposed knowledge against them. In the case of your spouse, that's just unfair. In the case of God, it's just foolish. And I think compounds the sin. Yes, God knows how you're feeling. But if we haven't spoken to Him and opened up to Him about our hurt and our isolation and our whatever it is, whether it's the loneliness that the psalmist, the burning in his bones, I don't think that we can expect a sort of commensurate return in God's responsiveness to our needs. I think maybe the fact that we don't enter into our situations very deeply is part of the problem, but I think it's equally true that we operate with preconceived ideas of prayer that are limiting. You may think that prayer needs to be ordered or be reverent or something, right? So you listen to the guy talking about being a sparrow on the housetop and you think he's weird. That's not how you're supposed to pray. You're supposed to pray, Almighty God who knoweth all things, or whatever. Part of the reason why I keep coming back to the Psalms and preaching, this is three summers in a row, by the way, and actually my first summer here I preached on Psalms too, so this is like the fourth summer I've done this, is to help me and help us see that there are powerful examples in Scripture of people praying in ways that break the molds of preconceived ideas about prayer. If you find it difficult to sustain a prayer life that is made up mostly of, Lord, be with so-and-so, I invite you to take a stroll through the Psalms for something a little bit more invigorating. Lord, help so-and-so not to feel like an owl of the wilderness. You can laugh. I know it's sort of a serious point in the sermon, but I know that's kind of funny. You probably wouldn't pick that one, all right? The owl of the wilderness. But the owl of the wilderness prayer in Psalm 102 gives you license to pray with metaphors that try to capture for yourself and for others what they're going through. Some of these are really, you might use them. Withered. Tired. Days fading away. Whatever it may be. Some of them are going to be odd. You're not going to pray about owls of the wilderness and that sort of thing. That's fine. But pick some of your own. Death warmed over if it works for you. God invites us to get into it with Him. With strong language, with expressive language, with powerful language. And the Psalms model that for us. And I think many of our complaints about God's attentiveness and many of my complaints about the effectiveness and meaningfulness of prayer can be traced back to the fact that we pray lame. The psalmist doesn't pray lame. He gets into it. He tries to unpack what he's feeling, even if he has to tap into owls of the wilderness to do it. He does it before God, to lay himself open before God. So he gets into it for himself, he gets into it with God, and he gets into it, I think, as well, with respect to others. We're going to see next week that the psalmist moves quickly from his own personal complaint to the concerns of all of God's people. And we'll look at the rest of the psalm next week. But one of the benefits of really getting into it with ourselves in prayer, and also getting into it with God, is that it makes it a lot easier for us to enter into the suffering and difficulty of others. When we have struggled to face our situations, struggled to voice our needs, we're in a better position to help others do the same. Let me give you a very simple example of how this works out. Many times we are uncomfortable sitting with people that are in deep need, right? Whether it's waiting with somebody at the hospital while a loved one is in surgery or something like that, visiting the home of an elderly person. There's a lot of quiet, isn't there? Just sitting, waiting. And you want to fill it with stuff. So we say stupid things, right? Some just plain stupid things, some stupid spiritual things, right? And then we try to keep it as short as we possibly can. We're uncomfortable in the presence of suffering. Other people's suffering. Why? Well, because a lot of the time, we're very uncomfortable in the presence of our own suffering and do everything we can to avoid it. Lots of different ways that we try to avoid our suffering. If we have entered into our own suffering, though, in prayer, the way the psalmist has, it does a couple things for us as we sit with others. One, I think it equips us to sit through the quiet without saying stupid things. You can borrow from Psalms directly, sit there and in your silence pray some of these Psalms for them. Of course, you could do that. But going before God and attempting to express what's going on in our lives trains us to have a still and more quiet heart, and we can sit in quiet with those that are suffering. But I think it also may give us language to pray for and with them. Once again, probably not the owls of the wilderness stuff, okay? But if you have entered into your own struggles and given voice with expressions, with metaphor, with literal phrases, borrowing from the Psalms when the phrase works for you, that gives you tools to pray with and for someone else, to be the agent of giving expression to their suffering. Being able to sit there and not know exactly what they're feeling, because we never know exactly what someone else is feeling, but if we have entered into our own suffering, we are equipped to get into it in prayer and in ministry with those that are suffering. You may even share some of the words that have helped you, help them express themselves in prayer. But you can't do that if you haven't gotten into it in prayer about your own needs, gotten into it with God. That sets you up to be able to get into it in prayer and in care with other people. I think that through his expressive use of language, perhaps some phrases we could use, withered, smoky, shadowy, burning inside me, these are phrases we might use. Through his expressive use of language, the psalmist really gets into prayer and gets into his situation for himself, really articulating, dredging up what he's dealing with and what he's feeling, even if he has to use strange expressions to get there. He gets into it with God, open and honest about his emotions and his brokenness and even his perception of God's involvement. And that, the effect of that is not only a more open and honest engagement with his suffering and with God, but it sets him up to engage meaningfully with others. So this morning, all I want to do is just give that to you. Give this little reflection on the psalmist's emotional expression in his prayer as a model, maybe it's not even a model yet for you, as a prompt, as a spur to what? To in prayer, even when we can't find the language for it, really enter into difficulties. And open up with yourself. Take the time. Create the space for reflection. Invite other people to help you with the reflection as necessary. Take that openly and honestly before God. God doesn't care how you pray. He doesn't care if your metaphors don't make any sense. He doesn't care if you use owl two phrases in a row. He's not counting how many times you say, Lord. Openness and honesty before Him about how we are feeling, that we've unpacked for ourselves and before Him. I think that it'll invigorate your prayer life for one thing. And it'll equip you to pray better and more fully with others. I don't know if you're in the midst of a difficulty this week. If not, then go into Psalm 102 or other psalms like it for the sake of being able to get into it with others better. But if you are struggling, are in difficulty, take the model of the psalmist to really enter in prayer to what you're going through. Let's pray.